speaking about when a child is highly distressed. I was asked to say a little bit about myself, so a quick introduction. I started my training in family therapy. That's my focus in Eretz Yisrael, where I studied for a few years. I eventually went out to California, where for a number of years I was working in a local school there, the Oakland Hebrew Day School, as the school therapist. I worked with the children there, and I worked with the families there. While I was there, I eventually realized that as I was working with a child, I was bringing in their family. I was bringing in the parents, bringing in the system that they're in. And as I was working with that, I began to realize that I could send the kids out, I'm just focusing on the parents. So eventually I realized, I think I'm going to do couples therapy, and so I focus on couples therapy. In the world of couples therapy, I was searching for the best approach to working with family, with the couple, and I discovered EFT, emotionally focused couples therapy. Anyone familiar with EFT? Perfect? Maybe? Maybe not? Okay, good. We'll get some new ideas here. And in the process of that, over the years, EFT, where I then transitioned to working with couples, has been expanding. It's now expanded to EFFT, emotionally focused family therapy, and emotionally focused working with children, working with individuals. So even though most of my practice has been with the family system, we're going to try to apply that in particular with the child, as the EFT world, the therapy world, is taking this approach. And hopefully it'll be meaningful and helpful, but you'll probably see a significant amount of my bias, in particular where it comes to the aspect of working with a child, in particular a distressed child, requires other. Okay, we'll see what that means, but it requires someone else's presence. It's not that they can resolve their distress solely. Okay? So let's dive in, shall we? What I'd really like to cover for today is, number one, how do we define distress? Right, we're talking about the distressed child, so what does it mean, a distressed child? We have to define our terms. What scenarios or themes often cause distress for a child? What is happening in the inner world of a child when they are in distress, right? We know what we see manifesting on the outside. What can we garner that's actually happening inside of this world, of this child? And ultimately then, what is the number one best way for us then to help them, this child, to regulate in a scenario where they are highly dysregulated in distress? Hopefully we're going to talk about how to communicate with a child in distress and practical techniques in calming a distressed child. Okay, so we got our work cut out for us. And let's dive in. How do we define distress? Help me out here. How do we define distress? Anyone? A distressed child, what would that look like? Who's upset?
Dysregulated.
Dysregulated.
Shut down.
Shut down. Just. What else?
Agitated.
Agitated. Right? Agitation. Good. What else? Throw something else out there.
Fidgety.
All right? There's something going on. It's manifesting in their physical behaviors. Yes? Difficulty controlling emotions or body. Emotions or body. Sometimes the two are very much intertwined. Yes? Anything else? Distressed child. Yes?
Anxious.
Anxiety. You can see it in there, right? There's lots of ways that manifests distress, right? It could be, you just see there's something somber in this child. I'm looking over there, and there's something wrong. It could be that it's very loud and present, taking over the moment, the attention, the space where we are. It could be scary. It could be a little scary. What is going on with this kid? I don't even know. It could look like a rage. It could look like all sorts of different factors. And so this dysregulation within the child that we see, we're trying to understand what's happening on the inside, and how to address it. So the ABCs, what scenarios cause children distress? Right? As we're setting the stage, help me out here. What kind of scenarios would you say might be feeding into this child's level of distress in the space?
Family dynamics.
Yes, thank you. Something's happening in the home. Maybe something's going wrong at home. Maybe there's a child who is sick. Maybe there's something going on that's just challenging. There's a burden on the family. Good. What else?
A sudden change in schedule or something to throw off the rhythm of their day.
Sudden change in the day. Transition. Routine is off. And it is manifesting in their behavior. Yes. Social interactions, recess, something's happening between the friends. Yes, thank you.
Maybe like the challenge of academics.
Academic challenges, they can't keep up with whatever's going on. Yes. Yes.
Physical things, not enough sleep, not enough food.
Maybe they're hungry, maybe they're tired. Excellent, excellent. Yes.
Disappointed,
confusion. I don't know what's going on around me. I can't follow what's happening. The game, the instructions. Good. So, I tried to sum these up, but we might have missed some of them. Altered expectations. They're not getting their way. Right? It can lead to disappointment, frustration. Something's off. Right? Boredom or a change in routine. Change the daily schedule. And that can cause a distress, upset inside. Conflict. Right? Arguments, disagreements with others, they can trigger emotional responses. Or there's some form of stressor, a physical stressor. They're tired, they're hungry, they're being physically off. Right? The ABCs of what causes distress in the child. Okay, now, when this is happening, on the internal world, they're feeling off. Their system is not aligned. And now, in that moment, we need to know what's really going on. And now for that, we're going to now try to take a new lens. Okay? On the surface layer we have some of these different stressors, we have these different impacts. On the inside, we're going to try to make sense of this on what we call an attachment level. Now, is anyone familiar with attachment theory? Heard of it? Probably, maybe, somehow, somewhere, maybe significantly read up on it. Thousands of research papers on it. Right? Attachment theory is based on the concept that the number one drive in the human being from cradle to grave is that I want and need to feel safe. Now, safe is not limited to physical, as we're going to expound on. There's this emotional need to feel that I'm okay. And when I don't feel okay, it's highly distressing. And so, the ABCs of attachment are number one, I need a sense of acceptance. If I am in the presence of a space where I am not feeling accepted, who I am is not okay. I don't feel safe. This child, in these different scenarios we're bringing up, and different pieces of them, might be feeling a sense of who I am in this space is not accepted by socially, by my peers, by my teachers, by my parents, by my setting. I need a sense of belonging. That I have my place. I have my home. Right? If something is awry, something's awry with my social circle, something is awry with my family circle, I don't feel I belong anywhere, and without that, on the most primal level, that's going to cause a high level of distress. Comfort. Right? As I said, I'm highly biased that we need other. If I don't have anyone to turn to, if I feel I'm in this world on my own, and I have nowhere to go, that's going to be a significant source of distress. and safety. Do I feel physically safe? Do I feel emotionally safe? Can I be present? Can I be around? I don't feel safe is a general theme of if I'm lacking the ABCs, acceptance, belonging, comfort, or safety, then I'm not going to feel safe. And when I don't feel safe, I'm going to come out very distressed. All right. So when this child is sitting there in front of us in their high state of distress, and we know that there might be something happening, might be stressors from the outside, we need to know that on the inside, something is causing them to feel they're in a space that isn't, they're not, it's not okay. I'm not okay. This setting around me is not okay. So now, how does that play out? So we all have these very basic needs. And these children, no different than us adults, we all need to feel accepted, that we belong, that we can find comfort when we need it, and that we can have safety. These are all our needs up here up top. And as we follow the circle around, when we have our needs, we reach for our needs. All right? In an ideal world, we can reach out to our friends, we can reach out to our family, we can reach out to a teacher, we can reach out to any person around us, and we get that emotional need met. That sense of other that helps me regulate within. I feel you accept me. I feel I belong. I feel a sense of comfort, of safety. And that enhances our self-worth. And we have a sense of connection. Okay? And the cycle continues on and on, all day, every day, sometimes consciously, most of the time not. But every child and every being is seeking on a regular basis to feel a sense of acceptance, belonging, comfort, and safety. Now when the disruption, when the distress happens is when they're reaching but the need is not met. I'm seeking acceptance and my friends are not accepting me. I'm seeking comfort and I'm not receiving the comfort that I need. And now, what plays out is my system becomes alarmed. And the alarm starts to go off inside. That might manifest physically, the butterflies in the stomach, I'm not feeling well, might feel heavy, might feel weak, might feel hyper. And as the alarm is going off inside, the needs are still there. But now, as the needs are not getting met, it changes my own internal system. Now I start to feel a discomfort, a negative view of myself. Or sometimes a negative view of others. The world out there is not nice. Or I'm not worthy. I'm not okay. And so now that leads to a child not directly reaching out for comfort, directly reaching out for a need that they have, a safety, to know that this is safe, this is okay. But rather, they're either not reaching or they're reacting. Shutting down or intensifying the way that their presence is manifesting. And now as the need's not met, because especially now you're shut down, nobody knows what you want or need, or you're reacting in ways that are disruptive and challenging, it's going to be difficult to provide you with a sense of acceptance, belonging, comfort, and safety. And that can build anxiety. Develop depression for older ages, but can be developing addictions. And the process goes round and round. Any questions? So, yes?
Does that mean if a child doesn't feel safe, so he's now trying to make himself seen?
Oh, good, good. The question being, when a child doesn't feel safe, what are they doing? So one thing that they might be doing is they're trying to be seen. They want to be seen. They need to be seen. That experience, right, the seeking attention could be for multiple factors. It could be because I want acceptance. I want the class to laugh because that makes me feel a sense of acceptance. Or it might be that I want the class to laugh because I feel I belong. or I want to win the game, or I want to, there could be a number of ways that the behaviors, right, just that talking about feeling seen, it could also be if a child is quiet in the corner. And how is that a manifestation? Because the way that I'm handling this distress is by trying to block it off. So I'm not being reactive. Or I might get, if I don't feel physically safe, I might be physically reactive. If I interpret something that's happening, we're all getting in line, and somebody's pushing me from behind, someone's pushing me from behind, or in front, and I can't make sense of this situation, I now don't feel safe in this moment, and I might be reacting to my own sense of not feeling safe. Or I interpret things around me, and now I'm going to react in ways to attempt to reestablish my equilibrium there to feel safe inside. Any other questions? Yes?
If along the way, it's like if needs are met, then the whole circle stops? Is that
if the needs are met, then the circle stays on the inside. Because they're still going to need them, but then they're reaching. And if the child is reaching, that's, we're calling that more like a positive seeking of comfort, of talking, of interaction. Right? Every general basic interaction that we're having with a child has kind of a dual purpose to it. It has the information we're conveying. It also has within it a message of, I accept you, you belong here, you are safe. And so our general back and forths are giving that to the child when everything's running smoothly. Right? It's not, the system never shuts down. The system just can run on the inner circle where it's running in a positive, interactive space. But when it gets a break in the system, that's when it goes off and the distress flares up. Question? Yes?
Initially, it sounds like there's a constant need for external validation in order to have normal functioning.
So I would say that is correct, except for the word constant. And there is always an existing sense of I need to feel that I am accepted, belonging. You might not have to constantly give me that in order for me to feel that I'm accepted and belonging. I can get that just from a few interactions a day with different people to kind of reassure my system inside, versus if I walk into a setup where I don't have any of that, then the distress is going to flare up. So I guess that the constant is accurate if you're talking about it from the person, but from the provider, it's not as if I have to constantly give this to you. It's but that need exists, and we're constantly aware of our surroundings and how it's impacting those needs. Yeah. Any other questions so far? Okay. So, the number one best way for a child to regulate. What do you think? Give them attention. What else? Same?
Give them space to calm down.
Give them space to calm down.
Structure.
Find a way to connect. Say it again?
Accept them.
Accept them.
I want to make sure their needs are met.
Make sure that their needs are met.
Yeah, the ABCs.
ABCs. Give them their ABCs. Anyone else want to throw them there? The number one best way, all of these are integral, is to recognize that it is going to be through you. That this child is in distress, they need other to help them to regulate inside. They're not going to be able to find their inner calm, their inner sense of acceptance, belonging, comfort, safety, alone. They need other. And so we have to provide that to and for the child. Now, how do we do that? How do we give that to this child, especially when there's lots of stuff going on all around us at all times? We don't typically have a lot of time and opportunity to give one-on-one. So let's kind of follow the flow chart here, and then we're going to talk about how to address it. So on the most basic level, these attachments and kind of expounding on them. I need to know that you know, you would accept, know and accept the way I am. You see me. You understand me. You care for me. Treat me with care. Value me. Comfort me. Be present with me. See me as capable. Treat me as worthy. I need to know that I'm needed. Now, as I have these needs, when I get a sense of it's not being met, and I'm disconnected from the others around me, I don't feel that sense. I don't feel accepted. I don't feel cared for. I don't feel I'm needed. So when different emotions happen. Now, this right here is, we'll call this the what's external. So on an internal level, there's emotions. There might be sadness. There might be lonely. There might be inadequacy. Desperation, feeling abandoned, afraid, grief, disappointed, hurt, hopeless. These emotions, they drive the negative behaviors that we're seeing on the outside, on the top. Now, what we're seeing is, we might see anger. We'll see rage. We'll see blame or frustration, indifference or overwhelm, a sense of rejection, resentment, contempt, jealousy. Those things we're seeing on the outside as they're making meaning of themselves and the others around them. They're interpreting. They're interpreting, where am I in the midst of the social structure and the system around me with the individuals and group that I'm a part of? And ultimately, they're trying to cope. What we are seeing is an attempt and a state of distress for a child to cope with that distress. And that coping strategy might be that I'm attacking someone, verbally or physically. I might be defending myself in some extreme version. I might be protesting. Why is nobody giving me any focal point or attention? I might be just looking away, trying to ignore the fact that I'm in so much distress or shut down. Or I might be placating and trying really hard to gain favor, because I need, to an extreme, that sense of acceptance, belonging, comfort, and safety. Any questions on this slide? Any thoughts, questions? Okay. So, now how do we interact with this child? How do we give them what they need in this moment when they're in that state of distress? So, two main types of communication. I'm trying to convey to you verbally, using my words, some message of, you are okay. You are safe. Now, I might not use those actual words, but that's one aspect. On a very other, deeper level is my nonverbal. What is my facial expression as I'm interacting with you? What is my body language expressing to you? All right, how, or even a text or a written message on the board, a nonverbal way of communication, how am I conveying to you the message that I want to tell you that you belong, you can turn to me, this is a safe space here for you to be. Okay? Because otherwise, this child is feeling very lost. They're feeling in their distress space, they're disoriented, confused, trying to find their way in the midst of an internal sense of, this is not okay, I'm not okay. So, when we're trying to convey the message to the child, all right, the words, I love you, they don't match the message that I'm conveying, my presence. And my presence, there have been studies, we say, I think is 90-something percent of what's interpreted that conveyed to us is actually through facial expression, body language, more than words. So, that's a very profound, important concept right there. that the content, what I'm saying, is not nearly as important, especially for this distressed child who needs an emotional message. They don't need the words. They need to receive internally that you're okay. So the how is going to be so much more important to them than the what I'm trying to tell them. There it is again. Okay. So we want to know how to find that path. How to find that path where we can meet the child and give them what they're needing versus continuing down the misled, the wrong direction of that distress. So I want to introduce three concepts. And they're all intertwined, but we like to separate them out. And that is a message of the ARE. The ARE, this is created by Dr. Sue Johnson, and it's an idea that we at all times are trying to convey this message to a person that we care about, whether it be to our loved ones, whether it be to children or to our students, or even to each other. Right? If I want you to feel your needs are being met in this moment, I need to give you three things. I need to be accessible to you. And we'll expand on each one of these. Accessible, the basic level that you can get to. Responsive. When you do reach out to me, I'm responding to you. And engaged, that I'm glad you're presenting this, and I'm glad you're here talking to me. Okay? Now let's look at those in more depth. Accessible, in one phrase, one line would be, I am here for you. Okay? And we want, in order to both prevent distress, and especially in a moment of distress, we want the student to know, I'm here for you. I'm attentive, I'm available to talk to you. Our body language is going to convey this just as much, if not even more, than our verbal language. Right? Am I looking at the child when they're coming up to me in this moment of distress, or when I'm coming over to them to talk to them? Am I facing the child? Am I eye-to-eye, face-to-face looking at you? Am I demonstrating accessibility in my presence here as I'm trying to address you in your state of distress? Questions or thoughts about accessibility? Yes.
What are some strategies when we are teaching, when we're not in that moment actually accessible to deal with a distressed student or multiple distressed students?
Excellent question. Right? What do you do when I can't give you that fully accessible presence of mind? So what I would say is you can give, we'll call it closed accessibility. Meaning, you can go up to this child and you can say something along the lines of, I want to talk more about whatever's going on here. I don't think we can right now. Okay? But maybe let's try to find a time you and I. Now that might be where the child is looking distressed, sad. Right? Let's say other scenarios where there's a more intensified something going on. Sometimes I might not be able to use accessible and I might use another one, but I'm just using, kind of, let's say the kid's looking really down. I want to be here for you. I can't right now, I'm teaching this class, but I do see you. And a 3 to 5 second moment to convey that to you. And I'd like to, let's talk so the child can at least know someone's here for me. Any other questions? Accessibility, yes.
What about the other way, when the child is disrupting the class? Acting out.
The child is acting out, disrupting, that's not going to be a moment I can turn them and say, I'm here for you. Right? Right? So in a moment where, let's say the child is, give me a scenario. What's a disruption?
The child is jumping out of the tables when everyone's supposed to be sitting down.
So, I'm glad you brought that up, because that child is jumping on the tables, right? So, now I have to do two things, because there's this child and there's this class. And so this is the distress is no longer limited. Maybe it's starting from one focal point, but it's really the entire class is now in a state of routine break and potential distress. So in that scenario, we're going to talk about some of the things that you could use. I'll give you a brief sneak preview of an upcoming slide. So in that scenario, we want to be slow, simple, and soft. Now, sometimes you have to be loud, so that might contradict the soft, but slow and simple, where if, let's say, this child is in high distress. So first off, as I'm talking slowly, right? Let's say, shimmy. We're going to need to come down now. Okay, shimmy? Come. Let's come down as we're going to get back to where we were together. So I'm going slow. It can be very simple. I'm not saying, shimmy, you're causing a whole disruption here. The room is all getting, nobody can focus. We've got to get you down from there. He can't process all that. Right? When a child is in a state of distress, their internal system, really any person is, their internal system is in a higher level of, call it an anxious state, and their auditory processing, their cognitive processing is less. They cannot hear you as well. They cannot process whatever you're saying as well. If I actually want them to hear something, less is more. They're more likely to understand me if I can keep it soft and slow, because if it's high, it might feed their distress. So I want to keep it soft and slow. We'll talk about more pieces, but in that scenario, it might not be as much of a, I'm here for you, it might be more of a responsive or engaged space, which we'll get to. But thank you for the question. Yes?
So I assume all three of these, what if they don't want you to be here for them? Right? You're the problem. You just canceled recess. You just changed it. You gave the bad grade. Like, I don't want you right now. How do you...
Excellent question. Sometimes I will not be able to be that person for them. And that's true. You're right. Sometimes the best I can offer you is, I know you're really angry with me, and if or when you'd like, let's talk about it. For now, we're still going to have this classroom together. So in that sense, I'm kind of letting you know, in the back of your mind, I'm still here for you, even if you don't want me here for you right now. You can be angry. You still need to be quiet. I know you're upset. We're not having recess. Right? I am here. You might not want me here. That's okay. We'll still keep going. Okay. Let's look at responsive. Responsive is what you are telling me matters. Right? I'm listening. I'm open to what you're sharing with me. I hear you and I want to understand your experience. Right? I want to know more. Tell me more about what's happening there. And encourage more sharing. Even if it's just a one-word brief, as the child's talking, you're saying, oh, That conveys a very validating message, right? What you're saying, I'm not just listening, but it is meaningful to me. Your world matters to me. Now, again, this is not going to work in every scenario, but it's an important message that every child at some point is going to need, and as they're in distress, I want to give you that presence that you need to calm through your distress, so to be responsive in there as well. The third is engaged. Okay? And engaged is, I'm glad you are sharing. I'm glad you tell me. Not, I'm glad you're telling me that I'm going to go deal with this and do this and that and everything that you're asking me to do. No, I just want you to know that I'm glad you're telling me about it. Your words matter to me. I'm acknowledging you. I'm encouraging you. The more that you share with me, the more that you bring forward to me, and that promotes a sense of safety for the child. I have someone to talk to. I have someone that I can turn to, and it helps them to regulate what it is that's happening within them. Even just knowing that you are listening. Right? It creates a closeness, a bonded space, not in any inappropriate sense, but a human social bonding space. Right? I'm not debating, not defending. I'm not saying, oh yeah, but wait a minute, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that. No. I'm just here listening right now. It could be 2 minutes from now or even 1 minute from now. We're going to have to now talk to, you know, Moishi, that you hit Moishi over there, and he's crying in the corner, but we're separating that out. And first things first, I'm giving you ARE. I want you to calm. You're in a high distress. I'm accessible. I'm looking at you. I want to hear what you have to say. I'm responsive. I'm glad you're sharing with me. I'm engaged. I'm holding this space for you to calm down a little bit. Now, we might have to go back and deal with what happened there at Moishi, but at least now, hopefully, your system is slowly reaching a more safe sense, a calmer sense, a more present in this moment that we can now engage further. Questions on ARE? Yes.
So if the child has hurt somebody else, and the child who is in distress originally is the hurter.
They're both in distress, right? The hurter and the hurt. So how do you handle that? So it's really going to depend on a few logistics. And I'm speaking to you from an ARE expert. I'm not speaking to you as a teacher expert. I want to at least start with the fact that many people in this room will probably have better advice than I do. But in an application of ARE, you're going to have two options, right? Either I'm going to sit with the both of them at the same time, or if I have enough support, I can have one teacher with one and I'm going to be with another. Either way, I want to convey the message that, okay, let's slow down here. I'm here now to listen to both of you. I want to hear what happened. I want to hear what's going on right now. And there, I'm going to be a presence of calm that's listening to each of you. I'm going to be a presence of calm, and through our interaction, I'm going to try to give you a little bit of opportunity to feel that you're okay now. I'm here now. And we can have a safe space here that we can process this. Okay? Question behind there, yes.
So during this stage, are you encouraging the child to go, assuming it's not a situation that's just happening now, but they come to school distressed about something else or something that happened in the playground, are you encouraging them to go into specifics that might, I feel like it...
Might be happening at home, you're saying?
If it happened at home, or if they're saying their friends just don't accept them or something like that. But if you ask them to, if you say you're listening and you're engaging them, are you trying to get them to go into more specifics? Because I feel like that might get them more distressed.
Excellent question. Getting the child to talk might get them more distressed. So, now, let's think that through for a minute. First off, sometimes I might not have the ability to be there for the child. Let's assume that I do. Now, what do I want from to accomplish here? Ideally, I want to be a space that you can now feel calmer. You don't have to tell me more. If you want to tell me more, you can. If there is more to tell, you can. I'm not asking you, you know, tell me the details. I'm just being a presence here that's accessible to you, responsive, and engaged with you so that you can, in that experience, let's say as follows. The dialogue that we're going to have together, the word exchange, is not what's going to calm you. What's going to calm you is that you feel in this moment someone is here listening to you and present with you. That will calm you. So whether or not you might end up telling me more, whether or not you might not feel the need or urge to do that, I can give you a sense of calm by just being accessible, responsive, and engaged, and that's my goal with you in this moment. Right? If I'm a therapist, I have other goals. But if I'm a teacher, what I want right now is I want to help you to calm down so that we can move forward in this day and you can have a pleasant internal world engaging with the external world. Yes?
If you want a kid not regularly until you figure out the problem. Like until you take care of the other girl, hurt her, hurt her feelings, or until you figure out what you want to do.
It's a good question. Like what happens if this child, let's say, is really kind of obsessed with the other kid needs to be punished, right? I have my thoughts on it. Let me hear, what do you guys think? What do you do? What could you do? Any thoughts? Not all at once. Yes?
Validate the feeling of them wanting to punish the kid without like any commitment to action. Be like, oh, that makes a lot of sense that you want them to do that.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to talk about that. That's great. Validation is a great first step. I want to give you validation that, of course you want them punished. They hurt you. I get it. I need to hear more about what's going on, but that's noted. Even sometimes kids like, I'm writing it down. I want to deal with that. Good. Yes?
I'm a little kid, so I just tell the child that I'm talking to you right now. I want to know how to do. I want to make sure that you're okay and that I'm here to help you.
I want to make sure that you are okay. Meaning, and I'm adding some words here, but this child is, they're convinced that's what I need. I need this other kid punished. In reality, what I know that you need, I know that you need to feel accepted, belonging, comfort, and safe. I'm going to make sure that you're safe. I'm going to be that space for you. We're going to take care of that. And you want other things to happen? I'm taking note of that, but I'm an expert at keeping children safe, and that's what I'm going to do. Whether these are the words that I'm not, maybe not literally saying, but that is the message I can think. Conveying to the child, you are going to be safe. I'm here for you, right? I'm being responsive. I'm glad to share and engage with you. You can be calm and safe now. And that's what I want to give this child. Even when they're convinced, what I really need is that other kid punished, what we know is that what you really need is to feel safe right now. And you think that's how you're going to feel safe? I'm going to give you, through my presence, a way for you to feel safe now that does not require that, and will actually perhaps be more effective in you calming and feeling safe. All right, that I'm giving you my full attention. I'm the authority figure in this room, and you have my full attention. I'm here for you, and we're going to be okay. Yes?
Assuming that there are other people in the school, such as administrators or social workers or case managers, who can give a child the ARE that you're talking about at any given moment, and that when a child is extremely dysregulated in the classroom and disruptive and ruining the class, is it better for the teacher to try to keep the child in the classroom and try to give the child a message of, I would like to deal with this, but I can't do it right now, but we're going to work on it, and enough? Or is it better to send the child to someone who can help that child at that moment?
I would say that's definitely something to consult with the administrators on your opinion, but my personal opinion would be if there are resources available, then utilize them. That's all, you know, that's what they're there for. If there's something you can do that's quick and simple and going to do the trick in the classroom, then of course that's great, but sometimes it's not. It's not, and it's going to take a lot away from the classroom, and especially there are other resources available. So to utilize the resources that are there to give the children whatever they need and to, you know, satisfy the classroom and child needs, right? This is only, you know, in a scenario where I can give this to you and it will be impactful and helpful for you. But if it's going to, let's say, take 15 minutes of a 45-minute class that I don't have to give you on a daily basis, then obviously a consultation with the administration and other support staff would make the most sense in a scenario like that. And I think that, you know, we have to limit to know our own limits. You know, what can I give you? And where is it now beyond the safety that I give you as the teacher, and it enters the realm of you need something that other resources can provide for you. Yes? Yes, a great question. Just I'll repeat to make sure I got it, everyone hears. What do you do when the child is overly seeking safety with the motor? And it's kind of following her around, right? I would say it depends on the ages, right? But you can be very direct with what do you need to help you feel comfortable and safe interacting with the other children, because I've got my eye on you and everyone here, and I want you to know that, right? I'm giving you that safety, and I want you to have it beyond my 3 feet of where I am. What do you need in order to get that? And if the child can express and can know, that's great. If the child doesn't know, it might be helpful to bring in other resources to help. It might be that something's happening, whether it's in the classroom or outside of the classroom, that is giving this child a sense of not feeling safe, right? If they're getting bullied on the bus, or whatever it is, before they get there, after they leave, and that's still brewing, it's present in there, then they might need some outside help to get there. So I think that we're really to kind of give that message, I am here for you to feel safe, and what can I give you to help you feel comfortable? Safety might not resonate with a kid, but comfortable to be able to walk around, and they might have some idea of something that would be helpful. Or you can even suggest, how about instead of following me, we do a once every 10 minutes check-in. You just come over and let me know that everything's okay, just so that I have that. Make sure that you're feeling that way, and I know that. Right? You can be creative however you want, but to help them kind of expand that space. But again, as mentioned, there could be resources in the school to help as well if needed. That's not sure. Behind, yes.
I'm going to go back to the scenario that the child gets sent to whatever resources are available. Do you think that it is beneficial that when the child does come back to test, the teacher touch base with the child to establish that connection and the parents with the child doesn't feel like they've been penalized?
That's a great question. When the child comes back from the resources, how to engage? 100% to give some form of presence. It can be a 3 to 5 second engagement, though. Right? It could just be a big smile on my face saying, oh, welcome back. So glad to have you back in here. All right. Yay. Here you are. Come on in. All right. Something can be, it doesn't have to be I sit down here and talk about what happened, but definitely a warm presence that I'm back to that role for you and for everyone, accessible, responsive, engaged with you and the classroom, for sure. Yes, one more question, I'll keep going.
I'm just wondering what you do if you're seeing the child is in distress, whether they're shutting down or acting out, but you're understanding and you're doing all these things, but at the end of the day, they need to do the assignment or activity or whatever, you know, might have caused this distress. So how do you balance, like, I understand that this feels challenging. I understand you're disappointed you didn't get the partner you wanted or different things like that. And you still need to do this work, but they're still not available to do what they need.
So it's a great question. What do you do when ultimately, I'm adding to your question here, this is not my primary role as the teacher, all right? This is a secondary role I play to provide for you and to enable our classroom experience, right? And I think this alludes to kind of what we talked about earlier, that sometimes if this is taking more than I can offer you or takes away too much from everything else that needs to be happening here, I will need to bring in outside resources, not because I don't want to, not because I don't care about you. The opposite, I do so much, but this is not my role, right? And so if I can give you what you need in that moment of distress to help bring you back, and then you're back in and we can interact. That's wonderful, because you're human, and every child in the class is going to have one, if not many, moments that they're going to have a distress moment, and your presence can help bring them back smoothly. Some children might not be so smoothly, and might not be so accessible and available to do that, where at a certain point, and again, consultation with an administrator or with a colleague as to defining where exactly is that point of it's now reached. I'm no longer able to hone in my energies into this child uniquely for what they're going through versus, you know, the classroom. Yeah. Okay. So, the ARE, an important concept, mirror neurons. Okay? Anybody here heard of mirror neurons before? A little bit? Mirror neurons is the idea that what I am feeling and I am conveying, you are going to feel. Okay? That if I have anger and rage expression, you will feel inside some of that. If I am a calm, soft space for you to land, you will feel, begin to feel that inside of you. Okay, amazing studies have been done about mirror neurons, where someone eating in front of you, your brain experiences as if you are eating. Okay, some interesting different diet. For our purposes right now, that when this distressed child can see this presence of an adult who comes towards them, calm, perhaps even coming down towards, you know, sit down with them face to face, I'm calm and soft with you. That alone begins the process for them to calm down. I haven't said much. My words have not really given a solution to whatever is bothering you, but my calm presence is giving you some of what you need to begin to calm down inside. Right? Which is not always easy, because sometimes it can work in the opposite direction, where we're seeing this child having distress, and it's causing us some very significant distress. Unfortunately, we're also human, and we also pick up on it. And so sometimes it takes a very significant conscious effort where I need to remind myself the situation is not as extreme as this child is screaming. And I can come in and I can be, not that I'm like, hey, what's that blood all about? No. I'm coming and saying, hey guys, what's going on here? Right? I'm being a calm presence where something's happening here, and my calm presence is beginning to enter their world. Not immediately, they don't just flip on a switch, but to know it's happening. It's happened. Okay, the limbic system, that's a system within us that is in a state of alert, where we have, you know, something, a reflex emotional response of alert, jolted. So the limbic system is active in this child in distress, and the mirror neurons are slowly seeping in and giving them a message that it's okay, we can calm down. So, how to convey ARE in our tone? Oh my goodness, we are, okay, this is an important slide, let's do this one. So, the an acronym, RASSC, which I alluded to earlier. Number one, repeat. Repeat whatever the child is saying, to use those words. To use those words, and that helps them, hearing their own words on the outside, begin to co-regulate and process what's happening on the inside. So repeating, even just, I'm so angry, I hear it. I hear that, yes. Right? Using those words, letting them hear their own words spoken back to them. keeping it slow. Remember, their system is on a very high speed, and they can't process much. I'm trying to give them a very slow-down message. Join me here in a slower space. If you've ever seen Mr. Rogers, he is the expert at speaking slow. Okay? Hi. Yeah. It's slow. Okay? Simple. Simple words. We're not going to have a long explanation right now in this moment where things are running high. Right? But really just saying, hey, I'm here. It's okay. Okay, let's talk this through together. I'm here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see it as excited. Yeah. Softly. Right? I want that limbic system to calm down, and so I'm going to model that for you. And using the child's words, I'm repeating my message using his words, slow, simple, and softly.
Hands
to
the eye.
I'm sorry?
Eyes to the eye.
Oh, the eye, thank you, is imagery. Imagery is use an image to describe what you're feeling. Right? Sometimes a child, or anyone for that matter, cannot name their feelings. But to use an image, it says, it's like I am, you know, flailing in space and I got nothing to grab onto. You look so angry. It looks like you're, like, you know, I see your arms kind of running around back and forth, or I see you shaking. Whatever it is, giving an image can be an easier way to express an emotion. Where I can't say I'm scared, I can't say I'm upset, I can't say that I'm sad, but I could give you an image. That's imagery. Okay, we have...
What's between the repeat and the child's words?
Say again?
Repeat.
Oh, repeat is I think I apologize. When I was speaking about repeat, I was speaking more about child words. Repeat is I need to say my message more than once. I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. I'm with you. I'm listening. I'm listening. I'm still listening. And that child's words is what he's saying, and to give that back to him to process. So we have only 3 minutes on the clock right now. So we did cover the majority of what I wanted to cover. I have some other additional pieces, maybe another round. But I want to give a chance to at least any other questions before we close up shop for today. Yes? Say it again? Who's getting imagery? Good question. Either one. It could be me, it could be you. It could be I'm getting imagery to help describe what I see. Or you might be you can ask the child, you know, depending on the age, but can you give me a picture to tell me about kind of what you're feeling right now? What does it look like? Or sometimes it's helpful to just kind of it doesn't have to be a little image, it can be like a story, you know, like, oh, this reminds you of like a story we read. Remember where Billy in the book, and he was feeling so upset that he didn't get the cookie in the jar. And I see you kind of right now, it reminds me of Billy, right? So kind of giving that outside descriptive picture to help relate to what is happening in this moment. Yes?
What happens when you let them
space? Give them space to calm down. Well, rushing, I wouldn't say. If the child, if space is going to help them, then you can give them space and let them do it. Sometimes they might need that other to help them to calm down. I'm not here to redefine what policies are, but rather to know that we have a tremendous strength as this presence of that someone who's in the room who is their source of safety, to give that to them to help them to calm down. Yes. Yes.
So is it a way to create a child to be more independent? Like, how are you going to keep a child and make them independent? What you're saying is completely dependent, that we are all completely dependent on other people all the time. But that's not high function. It's like an adult can always be constantly dependent on other people for your own needs all the time.
So it's a great question, and it's always a powerful and important, sometimes shocking moment to realize that, yes, we do need others. We do. We all need it. That's the system we live in. That's the society we live in. And that's the way we relate to others. Children need it constantly. As I mentioned earlier, it might be that I need check-ins every once in a while, but in order to be healthy, we need to check-ins about it. Thank you, everybody, for this opportunity.